Hello everyone, and thank you for attending today's event, Webinar on Simple and Successful Dissemination for Teen Pregnancy Prevention Professionals. Before we begin, we wanted to cover a few housekeeping items. Audio for this event is being streamed through your PC speakers or headphones. This is the default option and provides the best synchronization between audio and video. If you are unable to listen to the audio broadcast stream through a computer connected to the internet, please join the teleconference using the details provided during registration. All attendees are in listen-only mode during the event. At the bottom of your audience console are multiple application widgets you can use. You can expand windows in the console by clicking on the Maximize icon at the top right of the widget or by dragging the bottom right corner of the widget. A copy of today's slide deck and additional materials are available in the Resource List widget that looks like a green folder at the bottom of your screen. They will also be available on the Eval TA SharePoint site and eventually OAH's website. If you have any questions during the webcast, you can click on the Q&A widget at the bottom and submit your question. We will try to answer these during the webcast, but if a fuller answer is needed or we run out of time, it will be answered later via email. We do capture all questions. If you have any technical difficulty, please click on the Help widget. It has a question mark icon and covers common technical issues, but you can also submit technical questions or issues using the Q&A widget. An on-demand version of the webcast will be available approximately one day after the webcast and can be accessed using the same audience link that was sent to you earlier. Now I'd like to turn it over to Gene Knapp of Mathematica Policy Research, Project Director of the Eval TA contract. Gene, you now have the floor.
Great. Thanks, Bryce. Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. We initiated this webinar because OAH had indicated that many of you reach out to them for ideas about how to improve your dissemination efforts. So we asked some of the communication staff at Mathematica to put together a presentation with some tips and tricks for dissemination, as well as some supplemental resources that may be useful as you move forward with your dissemination activities. Before we get started on the presentation, Amy Farb wanted to make a few comments to you. Amy?
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us for today's webinar. Today, we're discussing broad dissemination strategies and providing examples you can use with your work. We may later drill down to discuss disseminating data more specifically. So today's really just the beginning of what we hope will develop into a series of presenting your projects and your findings. OAH recognizes that you're in the middle of planning for sustainability and thinking through where and to whom to disseminate your evaluation results. We also know that this work is high stakes, and a lot of people are watching who are very interested in the results of the TPP program, individual programs, and the program overall. Policymakers and others are looking to us to determine if replication of the evidence-based programs work and which Tier 2 programs are going to make the evidence review. Because of that, we're really stressing that you approach your results and the dissemination of your results with care and caution. We're not trying to hold you back from disseminating, quite the opposite. We actually really want you to disseminate your results as widely as possible. But we want to make sure that the results you disseminate are the final results. Our basic guidance is that you not publish evaluation results until you, one, have results for the full sample, and two, have performed all analyses and adjustments consistent with the HHS Pregnancy Prevention Evidence Review Standards. We're asking that you keep your PO and eval TA liaison informed of your dissemination plans and your results. OAH really wants to make sure that whatever is disseminated is final and that there's never a reason that we would have to go back and correct or retract early findings once the final results are available. And we're sure you don't want to be in that position either. We're here, OAH and Mathematica, to review and provide feedback on your results and dissemination materials prior to dissemination. We're happy to do that, and we hope you'll take us up on the offer. We're in the process of developing FAQs and cluster calls and possibly webinars related to analyzing, interpreting, and presenting your findings. If you haven't received it already, evaluation grantees will soon receive a prompt from the SharePoint system to provide feedback on the topics for the cluster calls. We're thinking through other tools and forums for sharing that might be useful to you in this area, so please feel free to send us any feedback about what you'd like to see. If there's more to discuss here and a call or webinar would be helpful to these issues in particular, then please let us know through your project officers or to me directly. And we can schedule a follow-up call or webinar next month if that would be helpful. We're happy to do that, and we want to be responsive to your concerns or questions about this. And just one final note, I just need to let you all know that there's an example in today's materials of a fundraising letter. So I just need to remind everyone that federal funds cannot be used for fundraising activities. Fundraising activities must be funded through non-federal funds. But I do think that the example is helpful, so we left it in there. And that's all I had for today. Thank you, Jean.
Thank you, Amy. Now I'm going to turn it over to Joanne Fleiderer and Amy Berridge from our Communications Department. Joanne?
Welcome, everyone. I'm Joanne from the Communications Department here at Mathematica, and I'm joined with my colleague, Amy Berridge. I think you may be able to see our little pictures in your window so you know what we look like. We're here to talk with you today about reaching your stakeholders to build support and sustainability for your programs. And between the two of us, we have about 40 years of experience in disseminating and communicating information, and I know that makes us sound terribly old, but we are going to give you some fresh ideas today about dealing with some really contemporary communications challenges. And we all know how communicating effectively has really gotten a lot more challenging for quite a few reasons. And first, there's more clutter for everyone to cut through. While you're in this webinar today, how many emails will pile up for you? How many texts, how many phone messages while you're here today? And how many of these will be relevant to you? Relevance is a big factor in communicating effectively. And another confounding factor for communicating effectively is that nobody reads much anymore. Rather, they're skimming, they're getting chunks of information on phones, on tablets, other types of devices. Communications have gotten a lot more fragmented. And finally, everybody's faced with really tight resources, and we need to allocate according to our priorities and what our goals are. We have to make more with less. So today we're going to talk about some of these challenges to help you get the right message to the right person or the right groups at the right time and in the right format. And hopefully we'll have a little fun while we're at it. So I'm going to cover some basic questions today about reaching target groups and tailoring your messages to different stakeholders. And then Amy's going to talk about effective formats and give you some tips on how to connect with different people effectively, and then how to measure what you're doing so you know what's working and what needs attention. This is a really important piece of communicating effectively, creating that continuous feedback loop so you can take the best and leave the rest from what you're doing. And at the end, we hope to have lots of time to answer your questions. And we'll refer throughout this webinar to some of the resources in your resource guide. There are some sample templates in there for you to use in communications. There's a guide, and there's also a kit. So we hope you'll take some time to look at those after the webinar is over. So we are going to turn to some key dissemination questions here. First, things you'll want to answer at the very start of your planning process. And you probably have heard many of these before. Who do you want to reach? Defining your audiences here is key. Are you reaching out to funders? Are you reaching out to policymakers? Are you reaching out to parents or teachers? There may be more than one group that you're trying to connect with. What would you like these people to do when you get to them? What outcomes are you looking for? Are you trying to build awareness? Are you trying to create understanding? Do you want people to take action? And then what do you want them to know about your program? This is going to vary for different groups. And the next question, how can you best reach these audiences, is also going to vary for different groups. The different channels you use will need to be adjusted depending on who you're targeting. And you know, a variety of communications, social media, newsletters, fact sheets, traditional media may be appropriate. Amy will talk a little bit about that during her part of the webinar today. But next, we'd actually like to find out a little bit about you. If you would answer a few questions, we're going to create a couple of polls during the webinar today. So first, we'd like to know, what's your biggest dissemination challenge? Is it having adequate tools and resources, having enough staff time and expertise? Is it finding or creating the right content? Or is it getting buy-in from your powers that be or your stakeholders? So if you could just take a minute and answer those questions, we'll come back and look at the answers in a few minutes. Okay, so starting at the beginning, the first thing you'll want to do is decide what you have to disseminate, and this is going to vary depending on where you are in your project. If you're at the beginning, if you're at the middle, if you're at the end, you'll have different types of information that you'll want to push out to key audiences. And you may very well have more than one audience. We recommend that you be as specific as you can in defining your stakeholders. And when we talk about stakeholders, we think of them as any group or any individual who can affect or who can be affected by the achievement of your objectives or who can influence those objectives. And if you're in the lucky position to just have one audience, that's great. If you're writing to a potential funder, you can have a crystal clear message for that one person. But the reality is that you probably do have more than one audience, and you'll need to divide them into the primary and the secondary audiences and then develop your materials around those different groups. So next, I want to talk a little bit about goals. And this is really where you incorporate your vision into the process. What do you want to achieve? Do you have a single long-term goal? Do you want to change a policy or a practice? Or do you have more intermediate short-term goals? This is where you may want people to understand your model and your benefits, to take action to help you sustain your program. This is something you need to give a lot of attention to, because in the end, this is where you'll also measure how effective your communications are. And you may have very local and specific goals, embedding key skills in the curricula, for example. Or you may have larger issues that you're trying to address, like improving youth's transition to adulthood. So, you know, laying these all out at this stage of the planning process is really critical. And you may not be sure about your goals. You may think you know what they are, but you'd like to be a little clearer on them. And in that situation, we recommend a couple of things. First, you can use social media polls inexpensively to gather information from key groups, and there's a little bit more about this in the guide we referred to in your resource materials. You can also conduct focus groups with the few key people representing your audiences of interest, have informal discussions with them, probe, you know, for what their ideas are, and incorporate them into your planning process. So again, we have one more question here we'd like for you to answer for us, so we know a little bit more about what you're trying to accomplish. What's the most important goal that you are trying to achieve through dissemination? Are you trying to increase funding? Are you trying to raise the visibility of your program? Are you trying to get information to teens and parents? Or maybe you're trying to influence policymakers. If you would answer that question for us, we'll come back a little later in the program here and look at the results. Okay, the next thing I wanted to talk about was messaging. which again, you're probably all familiar with, and we've all seen examples of unclear messaging. We recommend that you align your messaging with your outcomes or your goals. I wanted to just talk a little bit about an example of unclear messaging where it was not aligned with the outcomes or the goals. We all know distracted driving is a problem, people texting on their phones while they're driving. And AT&T rolled out a program called It Can Wait to try to prevent people from doing this, you know, texting while driving. And their intervention was actually having people, before they started down the highway, send a hashtag to friends and family, and they were criticized a little bit for that because that actually tended to make people more attached to their phones rather than less attached to them. New York State, on the other hand, took a different approach to It Can Wait, the It Can Wait campaign, and they actually converted rest stops along state highways to what were called tech stops, and encourage people to actually pull over, stop their cars, and use the rest stops for texting. So we encourage you to make sure that your messaging is coherent and congruent with the goals or outcomes that you have. So again, this goes back to audiences. Messaging, as we said, should be tailored for different groups. And one size does not fit all here. We encourage you to develop messages that connect with the groups you're trying to reach, that cut through the clutter, that are simple, that are clear, that are action-oriented. And if you're not sure, again, try testing your messages with a few key people representing your stakeholder groups. This will help enormously in refining your messaging before you go out and use it on a large scale. And what we're really after here is engagement. You want to give people information they want, information they need. So I just wanted to take a moment and talk a little bit about preferences of different groups and how your messaging might change when the audience shifts. Practitioners, we know this from experience, like practical information. They want information to help them do their jobs, whether it be in a classroom or a clinic or an after-school program. Policymakers don't want a lot of detail. They want bullets. They want top-line findings. They want you to help them support their position. Funders want to know that their investment is worthwhile and that it has a chance of actually affecting change. Parents want you to help them help their children. They like information that will help them improve the circumstances of their children. And researchers, of course, like a lot of details. They want you to help them understand how you got your results, how you came to your conclusions. This is one group where you can really actually get away with providing lots and lots of information. And then there's the general public, which may ultimately be an audience you're trying to reach, and the general public likes to be entertained or informed. They like to have human interest stories that they can relate to, where you put a face on the story and there's a real person involved. So I just have a brief excerpt here to sort of illustrate some of the things we're talking about, and I'll read it to you quickly. Good nutrition is important for children's health. Poor nutrition can cause health problems, overweight, and obesity. Some health problems associated with poor nutrition can be serious and even life-threatening, especially as a child grows into an adolescent and moves into adulthood. Our research has shown that helping children learn good eating habits can help prevent these problems. Choosing healthy foods and being physically active are especially important. Parents, caregivers, and teachers can all serve as role models and have a big impact on a child's health. So just think about this as you can for a moment in framing this for different audiences, for funders, for practitioners, for parents. What might you do here? And there are lots of ways to do this. There is no one right way or no one best way. It's really going to depend on your local context and your goals. So if you were framing this for policymakers or funders, one possible message here might be something like teaching about healthy food choices in middle school can have a big impact on health and possibly reduce the need for costly healthcare in adulthood. If you were framing this for teachers or parents, you might say adults can help children learn good eating habits by serving as role models to prevent adult problems associated with poor nutrition. These are just a couple examples. There are many, many more, and we could spend a lot of time on this, but in the interest of time, we'll move on and go to framing, which in communications is a lot like framing in pictures. Framing in pictures focuses attention on what the frame surrounds. This is the same in communications, same type of metaphor. And really, framing is the essence of targeting your messages to a specific audience and connecting with them effectively. Portrait framing, as the slide shows, is close up, puts a face on a story sometimes, shows that it's real, shows that it happened. Landscape framing, on the other hand, is more like a wide-angle lens. And if you've ever read the Wall Street Journal, you may see both of these types of framing in action. They start out sometimes very close up on a person. There's a story yesterday that starts out, the key to a free night's stay in Jim Madrano's New York apartment isn't a stellar rating on Airbnb or a lot of frequent traveler points. It's really just about knowing the right words to say in Esperanto. And then it goes on to talk about a wider frame. Speakers of this language invented over a century ago have access to a directory of hosts from all corners of the globe. So you can see, starts out on this one person in his New York City apartment, then it broadens to the service available all over the globe. So that's two different types of framing that are actually used in the same piece. You may use one or the other. Another type of framing, which is similar to portrait versus landscape, is individual versus environmental. Individual, in this instance, tends to be more about values and personal choice. Environmental framing takes a broader view, may talk about systems around the individual. And this type of framing is often used when you want some kind of action to result from your communications. Things we don't argue about are sometimes the way to go here. You know, systems that people can connect with and share a sense of values that are acceptable and can move the discussion forward. So this is another way of looking at the same framing we talked about in the last slide, but it is a little bit more about moving people ahead in a debate or a discussion. And something, again, to think about when you're trying to do effective communications that draw out different aspects of your work. You may want to focus just on one aspect that actually fits into this either individual perspective or broader view, and then you can go from there with further tactics. So I want to talk about messaging a little bit as it relates to captions on the frame. There are a couple key strategic questions that you can answer when you're looking for messages that will communicate the frame. First, what is the problem? And then second, why does it matter? Who cares? Why should I care? This is often phrased that way. What does it mean for me? And then three, what is the solution? So if we go back to our nutrition example and look at that, you can see we pointed out a few places here where this excerpt, where you can find the answers to the questions we just talked about. If you wanted to use a portrait frame on this, again, something up close where you don't see a lot of detail around it, that might be appropriate for parents. They care about what happens at home. That's a very local type of framing. A portrait frame might also be appropriate for teachers who are focused on the classroom. By contrast, if you were going to a more environmental frame, that might be appropriate for policymakers. They want to see the wide angle, the broad view. And funders might be interested in the environmental perspective because it includes the structure around their initiative. What is there to help support and ensure sustainability? So framing can be used to help shape the debate and the discussion for different groups. You use different frames in different ways. But now we're going to shift gears a little bit and change things up, and Amy is going to talk some about formats and evaluating your efforts. So Amy, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Joanne. So just to recap the presentation so far, you know, we talked a little bit about the planning and the thinking that will go into your dissemination strategy. And so for this section of the presentation, we're going to talk a little bit about implementing or executing your dissemination strategies. And we'll start with your format. So choosing your format is a critical piece of this. And it makes sense to start with actually writing, because that is a key tool that you're going to be using. You're going to have to write a lot of these materials. So when you're writing your dissemination materials, particularly your news flashes, you really want to focus on using plain English, using action verbs. You want to use the what I like to call the $5 word instead of the $50 word. Try to keep things as clear as possible. You also want to think about how you can make the text work for you. We talked a little earlier about how we're all in information overload, and the idea is that you need to cut through the clutter and find ways that you can engage with the different audiences that you're trying to reach. So think about how you can make a headline or a subject line grab someone's attention. And in the next few examples, we take a look at two different versions of a sample news flash. And the first news flash that we're looking at, this is an example of a news flash that might be written for program staff. So what we're doing here is we're presenting practical information for staff, for folks who are working on the ground with teens and their families. And if you take a look at the headline, It's an actual tip. Here's what you could do. You can make teen pregnancy prevention part of a larger life skills program. And it talks about a program that has used this approach and how it's successful. So this might be something, this might be information that program staff would be interested in. And you can see we're going to basically use the same information that's presented in this news flash, and we're going to create another news flash that's going to be specifically targeted for funders. So in the next slide, we're going to take a look at the different approach here. So again, it's hard to remember what was on the last slide, but it's really essentially the same information just organized in a different way. So this particular example, it really speaks to the implications of the program for the broader community. It talks about what the benefits of the program are. It explains and makes a case to funders why this program would be a wise investment for your dollars. And I just want to stop it for a second and say, yeah, when you take the time to do this, it definitely takes time and effort to reframe your messages. It's very easy to simply put together one news flash and send it out to everybody and be done with it. But when you create targeted news flashes like this with targeted audiences, you're going to reach people. There's that expression, you want to reach people where they are. And so this is an approach where you're going to reach people where they are by using different headlines, by rearranging the text, by thinking about the concepts that Joanne talked about earlier, framing and messaging, and what is it that you want certain segments of your audience to understand. So we'll talk a little bit about the different formats that are available that you might potentially be using. In the introduction to the webinar today, Amy Farb gave us a quick reminder to grantees about fundraising letters. So again, just to repeat that, you cannot use federal funds to do fundraising activities, but we did want to mention that fundraising letters are a tool that you will probably be using. And these are very specific and very targeted. And there are samples of all of these materials in your webinar widget. It's the green file folder. It's located on the bottom of your screen. It's called the resource list file folder. So you'll find a bunch of different examples of these in the dissemination toolkit as well as the dissemination guide. So that's just a quick word about fundraising letters. Fact sheets, of course, are also another tool that you could use. Fact sheets are used for a variety of audiences. These are materials that are really provide an at-a-glance look at your program. To talk a little bit about newsletters, these are very broad in scope. And one other thing to mention about newsletters is that you can consider them as a good resource for feeding content in your other platforms. So just a quick word about how all of these materials look, because again, just to reiterate, we are saturated with information. So if you can figure out a way to make your material stand out and catch people's attention and cut through the clutter, that's what you want to do. You want to make an impression on your readers. You want to get their attention. And the way that you can do that is to use some design, some really simple design elements. Consider using color. Consider using simple graphics. And think about how you're arranging the text on the page. You want to use headlines and bullet points and subheadlines and text treatments like bolds and italics to make information pop off the page and to grab people's attention. It's really hard to get people's attention these days, and one way that we have been doing that is through data visualization or creating visuals that illustrate complex ideas and concepts. And if you create these tiny little graphics, or what we like to call data nuggets, that's one way that their information can pop out to different audiences. And just really quickly, I want to say a word about infographics. And infographics, I think a lot of people have seen infographics in use today. There are many different approaches to using infographics. They can be standalone graphics that perhaps show a particular idea or concept. You can use infographics to describe relationships, to show ideas through time. There are also the infographics that I think a lot of people have seen that almost look like comic strips, where it's a story, telling a story through images and tiny snippets of text. So the idea here is that, again, that we're living in this era of information overload, and it's an old saw, but it's a true saw, and that is that a picture really is worth 1,000 words. And what infographics will allow you to do is make a lot of information and a lot of complex ideas accessible to your different audiences, particularly if it's new material. Just a quick word about designing infographics. The same principles that hold true when you're writing content hold true when you're actually designing content. And what I mean by that is you really want to aim for simplicity. You want to keep things simple. You don't want to create images or pictures that are decorative. You want to create visual elements that serve a purpose, that push the meaning of whatever idea it is you're trying to convey. You want to push that idea forward. Everybody likes pretty pictures, but you want these pictures to be functional, if you will. So that's just a quick word on infographics. So hopefully, at this point, you have created a great suite of materials. You've figured out who your audiences are. You've figured out what your messaging is. You've got the right format and the right platforms. And now is the time to figure out, well, what's working and what's not working. And the simple fact is that we live in a world where we're really being asked to justify and to measure our efforts. We really need to measure what we're doing in order to figure out if these approaches are succeeding or if they're presenting challenges to us. But the good news is that we have the ability to measure a lot of these efforts because we're living in a web-centric, internet-based world where we can really track and measure a lot of our dissemination activities. So what are the things that we can use? What are the tools that we can use? We can use email content management systems, and we'll talk about that in a second. We can also use website metrics. So some of the website metrics that are available, the free metrics that are available, are Google Analytics. Google Analytics offers some free tools. You can track page views, which is simply who is coming to look at your, how many people are looking at your internet pages. If you have materials on your website, are they downloading these materials? We can track the click-throughs, what people are actually clicking on, the live links on your website. We can track the time that they're spending on the pages. We can track if there's a particular, I almost like to call it a habit trail. If someone comes to your website and they follow a particular pattern going from one page to the next. On your email content management systems, I think in the old days a lot of people would send out emails through Outlook or maybe another software package, which really you couldn't do a whole lot. You couldn't really measure how you did when you sent out that email. But today, you actually, there are a lot of email packages that are available where you can really track what people are doing. How are they? Are they opening your emails? Are they reading your emails? Are they clicking through particular links? Are they sharing these emails? So some of the free email packages that are available, there's MailChimp, that's a free email package. There are also fee-based programs. These are just names. They're, SilverPop is one of them. Constant Contact is another one. And these programs allow you to track this sorts of information, the click-throughs. We can figure out the geographical origin of the users. We can also track what is the best time to send messages to optimize the click-through rates, and that's called send time optimization. And all of these metrics are available now. So this will really help us when we're trying to figure out what's succeeding and what's still a challenge for us. So I'm going to take a break right here, and we have another polling question that's coming up. So we're going to talk a little bit about social media next, but first of all, I want to ask the webinar participants, which social media channel do you use the most? And we've got a bunch of different options here. So we just want to get a sense of what people are doing on social media, if they're on social media, and if they have any particular preferences for their particular social media channels. And again, we'll come back to the answers at the end of the webinar, but we just wanted to get a sense of how folks are using social media in their dissemination efforts, if they have any preferences. And speaking of social media, there are a lot of social media metrics that you can use to evaluate your dissemination activities as well. There are free metrics available on the major platforms, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. There are dashboards on Twitter where you can manage or you can monitor the retweets that are out there, who's clicking through links that you embed in your tweets, who's following you, who's favoriting you, if there are particular hashtags that are popular and mentions. And the same is true on Facebook. These are all available for free on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. I also want to mention that there are fee-based monitoring programs as well that they basically give you a little more horsepower when you're trying to analyze your various social media efforts. Mostly they make it more convenient. They pull it all together in one place. One of these packages is Hootsuite. Another is called Moz, M-O-Z. Google Analytics also gives you some of these capabilities. So some of the fee-based analytics packages would be useful if you really want to dig deeply and look into creating some customized reports and try to understand a little bit about what's happening on your social media dissemination efforts if you're really doing a lot of work in this area. So one thing that I just wanted to say regarding both the social media metrics and also a little bit on the email content package metrics, it's great to look at the quantitative piece of this, to look at all the numbers data and the quantitative data, and you can get a lot of information that way. But there is something to be said for looking at the qualitative piece of your dissemination efforts. So what I mean by that is there are real people behind these social media accounts, there are real people who are receiving your emails. And sometimes you can't tell. Sometimes you just have an email address and you really don't know who that person is. But for social media, a lot of the time you can tell who is behind the Twitter account or obviously who's behind the Facebook account or if it's an organization. So you can really get a sense of who is engaged in your work. So it's important to think about what your goals are when you're using social media. And it's important to step back and certainly count all your metrics and look at your numbers and see how you're doing on clicks and likes and all that good stuff and comments. But think as well about, are you engaging the people that you want to engage or the influencers that you want to engage or the organizations that you want to engage in your social media campaigns? And this sort of comes back to our original idea about tailoring certain news flashes for certain audiences. If you take that little extra time and really kind of dig deep on the qualitative side of this, I think it's going to be beneficial to figure out what's working and what's not working. So a little more information that we have about evaluating your efforts. So this is an old concept we talk about in the direct mail world. There used to be, you know, subscribe to the Cookbook of the Month Club or the Record of the Month Club. I'm showing my age here when I say record. And basically, you would get a big fat package, mail packet in the mail. And in the old days, they used to divide up packets, and they'd send one packet to this address and one packet to this other address in another part of the country. Well, the software that we have now in email, the email content management software that we have, makes all of those early direct mail tracking and evaluation efforts look like kindergarten, really, because there's so much more sophistication available. And what you can do, really basic thing that you can do, is you can segment your mailings and by audience, and you can learn more about who's responding simply by doing a split headline. You can do a headline that is very straightforward, news from the Institute, or you can do a headline that is a little more engaging. You can split up your mailing segment, and you can see who's responding to these different mailings, these different headlines. You can figure out when they like to receive their information. Also within the actual news flash, as we pointed out in the earlier example, you can test alternate headlines. You can actually move the text around. And by charting information like web traffic and click-throughs and shares and retweets and likes, you can really get a sense of what is engaging particular audiences and what's falling flat. You can also test different formats on different platforms. And for example, if you have a Facebook page, maybe your Facebook page is really just reaching the teens in your audience. And maybe when you're sending information that you want parents to read, maybe it goes out in another format. So when you do testing, this sort of testing, and you can get a sense of what's succeeding and what's not succeeding, and really these evaluations can inform your overall strategy and hopefully make sure that your dissemination is going to succeed and be effective. So the final piece of information here that we wanted to pass on is this grid. It's almost like a worksheet to help you get started. It's get your dissemination game on. And, you know, we love acronyms in our field. So if we take a look at GAME, the G stands for goal. So maybe your goal is you've got a great program in place, but you really want to expand it. So, and to expand the program, you're going to need some money. So your audience for this particular goal is going to be reaching funders and reaching policymakers. The funders will make the investment in your program, and the policymakers may hopefully push some policy levers to, again, prompt some funding as well for your program. And so your message may be very simple. And it could be that your local kids could really use a school-based health clinic, and this could really make an effect in the teen pregnancy prevention efforts that are going on in your community. And so the expectation is very simple. You want people to donate to this cause. And so this is just a simple chart that can help you to streamline your thinking and to get you kind of narrowing down and thinking a little bit about what your dissemination goals are and what you're trying to achieve. So with that, this concludes the presentation part of the webinar. We can go back and take a quick look at some of the polls that we sent out earlier. And so when the first poll question was, what was your biggest dissemination challenge? And it's kind of no surprise there, staff time. Everybody is pressed for time. So that seemed to be the biggest challenge for this particular question. But they're kind of all over the map here. So for our next polling question, kind of an even split as well here between increasing program funding and raising program visibility. These are the two goals that you're trying to achieve through dissemination, funding and visibility. And so for our final polling question, we asked what social media channel people were on the most, and Facebook wins this one by a landslide, 77%. Excellent. So this concludes the presentation, and at this point I'm going to turn it back to Jean Nabb, who will facilitate our question and answer session. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Amy. So at this point, now is your chance to pose a question that Amy or Joanne can answer, some of your dissemination challenges or ideas that you would love to bounce off them. Feel free to put them in as a question in the Q&A box at the bottom. A couple of questions have come in. One is that at least one person has had trouble downloading the supplemental materials from this website. We just double checked and it was okay for us. If you can't download them from here, they are already posted on the EvalTA SharePoint website in the Shared Documents Webinars folder. They will also be posted on the OAH website. We have to make them 508 compliant first, so they will get up there in the not too distant future. If anybody would like them in the short term, you can feel free to reach out to the TPP EvalTA mailbox address, and we'll send those to you along in an email. So feel free to do that. One person asked whether we'll provide sample infographics that are, you know, related to TPP specifically. There are some sample infographics in the resource kit. At this time, you know, we didn't have plans to do any specific other infographics, but, you know, if you have ideas or suggestions or, you know, something that you're struggling with how to present, you know, please let us know and we'll see if we can, you know, help you come up with something as an example. All right, we'll wait one more minute to see if we have any additional questions that have come in. Someone asked whether the presentation will be available online at a later date, and yes, that will. So we will post that hopefully tomorrow to the EvalTA SharePoint site. And eventually that will also be posted to the OAH website, but there will be a little bit more of a lag for that one. But yes, this will be publicly available.
So this is Amy again. We just got a question about what are the different social media channels best used for. And it's interesting because not every social media channel is the same. And it makes sense that Facebook, for this particular audience, this is teen pregnancy prevention, it makes sense to me, I'm the social media lead at Mathematica, that Facebook is in such high, heavy use because this is a social media tool that really is used a lot by younger people and teens. But having said that, there are a lot of folks that are on Facebook. There are organizations who are on Facebook. There are, you know, adults who are on Facebook as well. In general, it's hard to make some general assumptions, but there are some trends that we've found in the research that Facebook does tend to be used by more Americans than any other social media platform. Twitter is used mostly for real time. It's a great way for people to get real time information. And so an example how this particular audience may want to use Twitter is if you have an event that's going on. I saw on some of the Facebook page, Facebook pages that there were particular events. And so maybe you want to announce something, hey, we're meeting up at this fun run in the parking lot of blah, blah, blah park or something like that. So real-time news information, you might want to use Twitter for that. LinkedIn is often called the cocktail party of the social media platforms in that it tends to be a little more formal. It tends to be used by more professionals. And LinkedIn, it would be a good spot to perhaps join LinkedIn groups that are focused on this particular issue, teen pregnancy prevention, sharing information. That might be a great way to connect with other professionals who are on LinkedIn. Google Plus, again, is a way to segment your different audience, your different groups, if you will. So you may have your Google Plus group who is interested in the teen Google Plus group. There may be the Google Plus group who are specifically researchers. So you can segment your different social media friends. And, of course, YouTube is really rising in popularity because it's very, you know, it's visual, it's videos, and everybody likes to watch videos and getting their information in about 2 or 3 minutes. And some of the other social media platforms, be interested to know what they are. But that's just a quick kind of rundown on what are the different platforms and how they might differ.
Great. We just had a question. So you just mentioned some of the additional sites that weren't on the poll. Someone had a question, and I'm not sure if you know the answer to that, but are kids using Google Plus more now? I know there's that Hangout feature.
It's hard to say. The source that seems to be the best barometer of social media use is the Pew Center. They've been doing a lot of research on social media use in the U.S., and they seem to have the latest statistics on who's using which social media platform. Mm-hmm. But I think Facebook really does rise to the top. But it is a good question.
Right. This is Joanne. I just wanted to add that in our experience, Twitter is really the tool of choice for connecting with networks of other people who may be interested in the same issues. When we look at our analytics for Twitter, we can see, you know, how many potential people we have reached through other networks by people retweeting and so forth. And it's really kind of interesting because the increases are exponential and really astounding sometimes.
Yeah, and this is Amy. I would just add that we do mention the Pew Center research in the dissemination guide, and there is a link to that site. So they're constantly conducting surveys. I think there was a survey that came out just the other day about Americans' perceptions of privacy. So I would encourage folks to go on that site and check out what the latest statistics are on social media use, because the other piece to this is that it's a very dynamic field, and it's changing all the time.
Great. All right, we've got another question. Do you have any suggestions on communicating with funders?
This is Joanne. I'll answer that one. There is some information in your kit about communicating with funders and a sample fundraising letter, as was mentioned earlier. But I think the most important thing before you write a letter to a potential funder or an existing funder, for that matter, is to be really clear on exactly what you want. What is it that you are asking for? And you really want to be persuasive in convincing that person you're writing to, and I would encourage you to really visualize that person. If you don't know the person you're writing to, find out as much as you can about them. If you do know that person, tell them thank you for any previous support, or relay to them any successes you have had as a result of their support or their funding. You know, really let them know that you appreciate what they have done for you if you've had a previous relationship with them. Be real. Talk about things in real-world terms. And in the end, if you do or you don't get support from that person, write a sincere thank you letter, because a lot of times we hear that funders, you know, feel like people sort of forget about them once the money is in hand. So we urge you to sort of keep up a continuing relationship with funders or potential funders. And when you communicate with them, be really clear on what it is that you want.
Yeah, and this is Amy. I would add to that, too, that when you're communicating with funders, it's always good to keep the personal interest of the program that you're hoping to fund in mind, too, because people like to donate to people. They don't necessarily like to donate to organizations. They like to make that personal connection any way you can, whether it's with slice of life stories or any way that you can put a face on your program.
Yeah, this is where you would use the portrait framing we were talking about, where you're very up close on an individual.
Great. Thank you, Amy and Joanne. At this time, we don't have any additional questions, so we'll wrap up the webinar. But again, if you have any questions or comments, you can feel free to reach out to the email address on the last slide, tppevalta@mathematica-npr.com. And an archive of this webinar and all the supplementary materials will be available to you through a variety of methods, including emailing us for those. Thank you all for your participation today, and we look forward to talking to you again soon. I am going to pass this back to Bryce in case he has any additional comments.
Thanks, Jean. This concludes the webcast for today. The on-demand recording of this event will be available approximately one day after the webcast and can be accessed using the same audience link that was sent to you earlier. Also accessible through the on-demand recording and under the resource list widget for this webinar or in the SharePoint site are some of the tips and tools we talked about today, including the slides from today's presentation, the dissemination guide with more details on the topics discussed today, the dissemination kit with templates to help you create different types of communications for your stakeholders, and other resources. Any future topics or discussion points can also be shared with the team using the TPP eval TA@mathematica-npr.com mailbox. Thank you and have a great day.